Our resident historian Felix, it is a beer, isn't it? Yeah. Felix Bedell, museums all over America have been collecting artifacts of the pandemic with an eye toward future exhibits that will look back at this era. It's a lot of masks. It's a lot of printouts of test results. But our historian Felix Bedell says a man in Tacoma is on a mission to find a museum home for something a little more colorful and refreshing. Felix is sponsored by the King County Library System. Good morning.
Morning, Dave. Yeah, it's a little early in the day for anyone else besides Sully, maybe. But this is a
story about local.
You knew that was coming. It's a story about local beer and local history. That's why we played the old Olympia beer commercial a moment ago. You know, one of my other jobs is working for the Washington State Historical Society, a big state agency that operates a museum in Tacoma, has a library and a huge collection of artifacts. I edit their quarterly magazine, Columbia, and so I hear from a lot of people who want to write articles about Northwest history. Last week, I got a call from an attorney in Tacoma named Bill McClure. He's 28. He's from outside Chicago. He's been in the Puget Sound area for less than a decade. I mentioned he's an attorney, but his undergrad degree is in history. So Bill McClure heard last year that the museum was looking for COVID-related artifacts. That's when he started noticing images popping up on the Instagram accounts of the local breweries that he follows.
And those were COVID-themed or pandemic-themed beer cans. And so there's a lot of breweries here in Tacoma, but broadly in the Puget Sound area and across the state that run kind of single batch or one-off beers. And what they started to do was pull on different themes of life adjusting during the global pandemic. So I thought that was really interesting, thought it could be a unique addition to the collection for Washington State Historical Society. So as a result, I started saving the cans. And over time, this just kind of amassed into much more than I expected it to be.
See, that's what historians do. They don't just drink beer. They notice things about the beer they're drinking.
Yes.
That's why historians are good to have in your community. Now, I'll admit, I'd missed this whole phenomenon. I'd seen all those In These Uncertain Times ads and everything, but I was completely unaware of special packaging. Bill McClure sent me a photo of his collection, which I shared on my Twitter account. Now, a lot of the small batches have funny names, like, you know, What Day Is It by Matchless Brewing in Tumwater, or Indoor Survival by Everybody's Brewing down in White Salmon in Clickitat County. Most have original one-off artwork by local artists. You know, one of Bill McClure's favorites is made by Narrows Brewing in Tacoma. The label says Checklist IPA.
It has keys, wallet, which would be, you know, your normal checklist for leaving the house. But in addition, it's got a mask, it's got hand sanitizer, it's got gloves, it's got a ruler, which presumably is, you know, social distancing reminder. So I thought that was interesting because we all kind of have a checklist when we leave the house. We check our pockets. And now, at least at this time, it's you got to have the mask to leave the house or you got to turn the car around and go get it.
So you know, these are fairly whimsical. And Bill McClure is going to research all these brands and all these pandemic-themed beer cans and put together a history of how it was that so many different local breweries did sort of a similar thing with their products and packaging. And we'll publish that in Columbia maybe a year from now. And I'm looking forward to what he discovers. But this is radio, and I couldn't wait, so I reached out to Matthew Rhodes. He's head brewer at Narrows Brewery in Tacoma. That's home of Checklist IPA and about six other pandemic-themed beers. He said the idea was hatched early in the lockdown, and it was a team effort.
We all kind of gathered together as a crew, obviously social distance, and kind of brainstormed what we could do to kind of reconnect with our drinkers. And we came up with the idea to just kind of reference COVID in a more lighthearted way.
Yeah, it seems like the main idea was to show solidarity with their drinkers. Essentially, you know, we're all in the same boat together. Like many alcohol producers, Narrows Brewing has done well during the pandemic with retail sales and with their taproom in Tacoma. And brewer Matt Rhodes said response to the pandemic cans has been very positive. When I was talking to him, I used the word commemorative to describe the cans, and he said that's not quite the right word. I do think the pandemic-themed cans I've seen are all in good taste. It's not like they're cashing in on COVID or this is some ghoulish thing. But all that being said, do these pandemic cans belong in a museum or a recycling bin? Margaret Weatherby, head of collections for the Washington State Historical Society, says, hold my beer.
It's an object that everyone can relate to. Everybody knows what a beer can is. Little kids, 90-year-olds, everyone knows what this is. And it's something that was created specifically for this time that we're living in.
So she's very excited that this collection's headed her way. And that was something Matt Rhodes of Narrows Brewing was very happy to hear.
It's extremely special. I didn't think that the cans and the labels would make it into a museum.
So the cans and labels will be welcomed at the Historical Society when Bill McClure donates them. But what about the liquid inside?
Well, when I get it initially, it's full. The collection is now empty cans. I made an executive decision what was going to be important for history and what would be important for me.
So Bill McClure.
So for historical reasons, the cans will be empty.
Yeah, so he's sort of slightly selfish historian. And actually, I actually asked Margaret Weatherby, so are you, you know, because sometimes collectors want the can that's full, right? I remember seeing a six-pack of Billy beer at an antique store 20 years ago.
Well, I've told you about my unopened can of Cajun Cola.
Oh, that's right. I'll check with Margaret Weatherby because she told me, we want the empty cans. We don't want to be storing liquid in the museum because, you know, the stuff could explode and get over all those valuable maps and other things they have to take care of. So, I mean, this is an unfolding story, right? The pandemic, we're still in the middle of all of it. And the fact that there's all this packaging from these local breweries that where they employed local artists to do the work, it's if you look at the Spanish flu influenza pandemic of 100 years ago, there's nothing like this. Most museums have very little from that pandemic to show for. Maybe a mask, maybe a handbill of some kind. But we'll have these very colorful things. So 100 years from now, people will think, wow, those people sure drank a lot in 2020 and 2021. That'll be the takeaway, probably.
My only question is, can you really tell the difference between what day is it beer and checklist beer?
I think an experienced drinker can. I'd have to look to Sully for advice on that.
Well, what kind of beer? I mean, they IPAs, they pale, they straight.
Yeah, checklist is an IPA. Yeah. What day is it? I don't know.
What hops were they using? Yeah.
Yeah. See, but so most of the ones that the Bill McClure likes IPAs. That's his favorite. I got the sense that's his favorite kind of beer. So, but you know, you, it's just the, who cares?
But
about
between
the
IPAs?
For eternity, it's just the can.
Okay. I just want to be clear because I a lot of energy goes into selecting the names, and I assumed it might be linked in some way to the liquid inside, but basically it's not.
I think it's just a clever name and a way to keep people. The people buying the beer every week when they're putting out a new variety every week, they love it. It's something to look forward to, something to kind of put a shine on what has been otherwise a very dark time for so many people.
Right. Thank you, Felix. Felix Bedell, all his features are at mynorthwest.com. A state senator is apologizing after being caught presiding over a committee meeting while driving. And the senator was caught by a reporter by the name of Chris Sullivan, who just happens to work for us. What happened?
All right. I was watching the State Transportation Senate Committee yesterday. They were discussing Senator Hobbs' new transportation package, the one we had talked about briefly yesterday. And Senator Rebecca Saldana from Seattle, she's the vice chair of the committee. And as I was watching this on the web, because they're going remotely, I noticed when she appeared and was interacting with the group, she was clearly driving her car. I mean, her hands were moving all over the place. Her eyes were looking at the camera on her dash and then darting up and looking around. And you could tell that she was actively driving. And I'm like, you're the vice chair of the transportation committee that sets the traffic laws in our state. I'm thinking you should probably set a better example than by breaking the law.
She was trying to hide the fact that she was driving too, because she used a background to sort of cover up what was around her.
Yeah, she used the state capitol background, which she uses when she does her remote testimony from her home or office. Because I've seen, you know, I've watched these hearings all session, but it was quite clear that she was going in and out of that background, and she had put two headphones in as well, which is also a violation. So not only was she violating the distracted driving law by having the video on and looking at the video and camera, but she also had headphones in both ears, which is a violation of another state law. So I asked her her press people, right? Like while the thing was happening, was like, hey, I'd like to hear from her. This doesn't seem right. And eventually she had to issue an apology and a statement later in the afternoon saying, I'm a working mom and I was running late to daycare and this is what I did and I'm sorry. But yeah, so I just kind of highlighted that. And I'm not sure, Colleen, you have a young family. Yeah. And I mean, do you buy that excuse?
Yeah, we were talking throughout this whole incident when you discovered it and then asked for, you know, an explanation for this and we're investigating the story. And the whole working mom thing just immediately was like, no, you don't get to put this on the shoulders of working mothers. We don't all make decisions like that because we're busy. Now, you know, I'm trying to think of, you know, how can I empathize or sympathize with her? I can't say that I've ever used FaceTime while driving, but I certainly have used my phone while driving. So we're all not perfect. We've all violated the distracted driving law. We just don't get caught by Chris Sullivan. And I think, well, what are the circumstances in her life that have caused her to make this sort of decision that she's in a pinch? She needed to get to daycare, but she's also working in an important part of this committee. So, you know, is the working conditions at the Capitol not conducive to being a working mother, or does she not have a supportive partner who can take the child to daycare, or maybe her partner has a job that doesn't allow for that flexibility? So I will offer her that perhaps circumstances in her life because of work or because of how her living situation is set up put her in this position, but she still made that decision, and a very public one at that. So I'm happy she apologized, and I hope she does get a ticket for it, because all of us would.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting is that this hearing was at 8:30 in the morning. Normally, the Senate Transportation Committee meets later in the day. So it's possible that, you know, things kind of ran afoul of her schedule. And the other thing is, though, is in this remote world that we've been doing so, I mean, I don't think it would have been a problem for her to go to Steve Hobbs, the chair of the committee, and go, listen, I've got an issue this morning. I'll join the committee late. No big deal. We've got plenty of senators to handle this.
But that's what I'm saying.
And so,
like, maybe
but,
so is it the video part that's
with
the problem?
Yes.
If the video had been off, it would have been okay?
Well,
not?
She still would have been violating the headphone rule as
we
well because we wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah.
But her apology
but
said
that's exactly what I'm saying, Sully, is that maybe if she did go to her colleagues and say, hey, I'm sorry, maybe she is in an environment, and I won't speak for Steve Hobbs. I don't know what kind of person he is, but maybe they would roll her eyes, or maybe she'd be left out of the discussion. Like, this is very common for women. When they bring children into the conversation, they often then get written off or ignored because, oh, she's being a mom again. She's not focusing on the job. So I will offer her that sympathy because I've been in a similar situation where I've been in workplaces where I'm afraid to talk about my children and, you know, the time constraints because I'll get left out of the conversation. Not true here at Bonneville, Seattle or Cairo Radio.
Senator
but
Hobbs
in the past.
Is a pretty solid dude. I mean, he's my senator up in Snohomish County.
Right.
I don't think that would. And
like
she's
said,
a very.
I don't know him.
Right.
This could be a reason.
But she's very, you know, she's been at this a while. And she has the respect of people. I think she probably might have been able to get away with that. But I understand her devotion to being on the committee at the same time. It's just one of those things where, you know, I've listened to Zoom calls on while I'm driving, but I'm not interacting and turning my mic on and off and staring directly at the camera.
So a phone call over your car radio without wearing headphones and no video is okay.
That would be, yes, that doesn't run afoul of the law. It was the fact that she was watching via video and interacting. And actually, the video, which we have up at still at mynorthwest.com, she's staring at the camera multiple times while driving and back and forth. And I just thought it set a bad example for someone, again, who is responsible for setting the traffic laws in our state on that committee, that she should be sending a better example.
Time for your daily dose of kindness now, brought to you by Robert W. Baird & Company, Incorporated. It is never a fair fight when a child is forced to battle a serious illness. But a businesswoman figured out a way to even the score by turning kids into superheroes. CBS's Omar Villafranca has the story.
4-year-old Elliot Hill of Georgetown, Texas, has no filter.
Superhero?
Or fear. But her mom, Jeanette, was very scared when doctors found a lump on Elliot's abdomen last year. It was kidney cancer.
She had a nephrectomy, which is removing a kidney.
She posted Facebook updates on her daughter's progress, and that caught the eye of Allison Schickel.
She's just this effervescent, beautiful little soul.
The Austin businesswoman makes robes for women recovering from breast cancer. But when she saw Elliot, she designed a superhero robe for a little girl battling big health problems.
She immediately put it on and she started running around. It was one of those moments when I sit there and go, you know what, this is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing.
The superhero hospital robe has a cape, mask, and pockets for medical devices.
It's like little things, something fun that doesn't feel like a hospital.
Elliot's joy inspired 900 more robes for other kids. She is now cancer-free, But if you ask her, there will always be something special about that robe.
Elliot, what superpowers do you have?
Omar Villafranca, CBS News, in Los Angeles.
Need to learn how to sew.
Yeah. Now from the G and Ursula Show, which begins at 9 o'clock here on Cairo Radio, here is G. Scott, who made an interesting announcement yesterday that he's got COVID. So you sounded fine, and I was happy to hear that, except for like a little sniffle.
Yeah.
But my main question is, how'd you get it?
Man. Me getting COVID felt like getting fired on your day off. Right. That's kind of how it felt. You know what I mean?
You've been so careful.
What? So careful. And here's the kicker, though. The kicker is I got it because a buddy of mine was around someone that wasn't honest about a COVID outbreak at their job.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and didn't tell them about it until after they tested positive. Not after the outbreak, not after they got symptoms, but after they gone and gotten tested and then tested positive.
Are they still going to be friends?
I don't know, but ain't my
It's not
friend.
The kind of friend I want.
No. But this is the important part. So last week, I took two tests. Okay. Mm-hmm. And both of those tests came back negative. Now, you guys know Fresh Fridays, I usually come into the studio mm-hmm. on Fridays, and I got the last test on Thursday and it said negative. And I'm like, nah, I'm not feeling it. I'm not going
That's
to work.
That's the right thing to do.
You know what I mean? It was, you usually don't say no to science, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, the test said negative. So if it says negative, And so I didn't. And of course, then I tested again on Sunday because the one buddy had woke up on Sunday morning and he had lost his taste and smell. And I'm like, all right, I knew it. I'm going back again to test. And I went to go test and then I got the results back. So it's
I want to know what sort of interaction you had with that buddy.
Yeah,
were you in close proximity for how long?
We were outside. Outside.
What?
Yeah, we were outside. Yes.
Were you shouting
together.
At each other? How did you pass the viral load?
I mean, I'm gonna keep it a buck with you. When we having a good time, yeah, I yell. You know what I'm saying? You got to hear my point, so I yell real loud. So, anyways, you get COVID, and I want to say this. Yeah, I'm in pretty good shape now because I've been running every day for the last 17 weeks. And so that kind of makes me feel secure. Yes, I do have a little bit of a cold. If it feels like congestion, if, you know, and that kind of deal. But the one thing about COVID, like even if you don't show up to the emergency room and even if you don't lose a job, the one thing is probably that's really scary. And I'll be honest with you. It's still the unknown. Mm-hmm. Right. Like you're still questioning things. Stay off Google, right? Like I've gotten on Google a few times, and that's a rabbit hole. You know what I mean?
Right. Going you have down. The sniffles now, but you think, what's tomorrow going to hold? What's this going to hold?
Thank you. And so when you wake up, so Colleen, when you wake up in the morning, you're like, okay, cool. All right.
I'm
cool.
Still here.
I'm still here. And so that's the one thing. And then one last thing that you really don't think about until it happens. And see, this whole ordeal, there's about 30 of us. Not that's impacted by this. And what I mean, no, not 30 of us have COVID, but 30 of us have been contact traced. So that means that you've been exposed. And if you've been exposed just because you have a negative test, technically you cannot go into that job. Well, the thing is there's some job, most jobs will cover you if you have a COVID positive test. Great. The kicker is there's other jobs that won't cover you if you have just exposure. Does that make sense? So
what does that mean?
Meaning I have some people that can't go to work right now,
mm-hmm.
but they also aren't getting paid right now because they technically don't have COVID. So they're not covered.
Oh, I see. They're not going to work because they worry they might test positive and expose somebody, but they can't get paid. You can only really get covered if...
You have COVID, right? Yeah, right. Yeah. But you're not,
That's
not,
tough.
if you were exposed, you cannot, you're not supposed to go in to work or around mm-hmm. people, right? So you to do things the right way. And so that sucks. And so what I'm saying is it impacts a lot of things. You got kids can't go to school right now. You have mm-hmm. kids that can't go on vacation right now. You know what I mean?
So are you still working because you feel well enough to work, or
yeah.
why did you make that choice instead of laying low and resting and helping your body out?
Oh, because I would just be miserable not working. You know what I mean? Like I'm fine. I mean, I literally did the show in bed, and by the way, I didn't have to, but I'm isolated too, right?
The luxury of radio, right?
I'm isolated in my room here. So, and one of the things is, if there's a, you know, I'm trying to look about the positive part. I don't eat as much because I can't leave the room. I was realizing
you can't
how
taste
many
it either, right? Ick.
No, I can taste. Your boy can taste.
Oh, okay. I thought you lost your taste.
No,
and
my
smell.
buddy lost his taste and smell.
Oh, yeah.
So, but that's the thing I learned, guys, that I was going to the refrigerator way too much in my life. Right? So now I'm in the room and food's being brought up here. I'm like, yo, you know what? This is keeping me from going to the
so
refrigerator.
You're thankful for the virus now.
Well, if there's one thing that I am thankful for is I'm thankful that I'm able to, number one, I'm blessed and grateful to be able to work. And number two, I'm grateful to be able to share my story. And just really, I hope that at least one person says, you know what? We're not out of the woods yet. We gotta keep going. And I tried, man, I went this entire time.
I know.
Without COVID.
It's frustrating. But you sound good. I'm glad to hear that. And I think you've got the energy that even a virus is no match for. So hang in there.
You're so positive, Dave.
Okay. It's the best I can do. And Hannah Scott is here with a couple of things to talk about in terms of legislation. A big victory as state lawmakers have been pushing for police accountability and new rules on the use of Native American names and symbols at schools. Here's Hannah. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave. So as we know, heading into this legislative session, police accountability was one of the top priorities for lawmakers really across the board. They just had differing levels on what they wanted to see. One of the biggest bills came from Representative Jesse Johnson over in Federal Way, and it was a police tactics bill that would dramatically limit all kinds of different tactics. In its original form, it would have banned chokeholds, neck restraints, also the use of canines from officers. That's where this bill got a lot of significant pushback early on. So in the end, the final version creates kind of a work group that will be informed by those officers who do work with canines. The issue is dog bites when they go after people. So they're going to have a work group that comes up with some really refined kind of guidance for that is part what this bill does at this point. But it also now bans chokeholds, bans most neck restraints. It puts strict new limits on the use of tear gas, police car chases, the buying of military equipment by police departments, and also bans no-knock warrants. It came up for a vote in the Senate last night and passed 27-22. Democrats say the past year has proven the need for this change.
We are sending some strong messages about what is acceptable to be enforced, because it can't just be for white folks of privilege.
These tactics need to stop. We as a people can no longer tolerate the damage, the collateral damage that is being done to the residents of our state by the overuse, misuse, abuse of these tools in the tool chest.
Well, Republicans say it's only going to make things worse, though.
By taking some of these tools out of the toolbox, instead of getting just those tools eliminated, you're going to go to more escalating tools.
I think we should be empowering our law enforcement officers to make the right decisions to keep our community safe.
This keeps putting our police officers at more and more risk.
Those people who look out for us, who protect us, who serve us. And I want to make sure that they have every chance possible to go home to their families every single night, because that is their main mission.
Republican Senator Peter King especially concerned.
Why in the world would anyone want to be a police officer under these circumstances? We are leaving them the only choice is to escalate their response, and then we'll cream them when they do that. We'll say, oh, the horror of it all. or they just have to stand by and do nothing. Well, I can tell you, Mr. President, that last year, the city of Olympia decided that they were going to eliminate a lot of these elements, tear glass, pepper balls. They eliminated them all. And on July 4th, the group showed up downtown. They broke out 13 windows in the city hall. They almost got into city hall. I mean, it was like you couldn't believe it, but the police couldn't do anything because they didn't have the tools to stop them.
In the end, though, again, this bill passed, and it was actually seen as quite a compromise, even among some law enforcement groups. It had started out, as I said earlier, with the canine rules and a lot of kind of stricter, a little bit more strict policy, and they found the middle for the most part on this from those who were involved in the negotiations.
Any Republican support at all?
Not that I saw on the floor in the Senate. There was some in the House, though.
Okay, so what about what Peter King was saying there, that when they tried this in Olympia, demonstrators just took advantage of that and ran wild?
And I've not heard really any significant pushback from on that from Democrats. I think, you know, it's hard to argue with. We saw the same thing here in Seattle. So there's going to be there are other bills in the police accountability space that are going to deal with more training and things that are going to need to happen as we see any if we see kind of protests and things like we have this past year that should help to address that. But this particular bill does not.
But does that mean that, I mean, imagine people who own businesses in those demonstration-prone areas want to know, does this mean you wait until they break a certain number of windows before you use the tear gas? Or you can never use the tear gas? You just have to wait until the demonstration peters out and they decide to go home?
No, and it's not. This does not completely ban tear gas. So this basically makes it so it establishes guidelines for when exactly law enforcement can use tear gas, and then who has to authorize that use. So I believe it's like Seattle tried to do with the chief or someone higher up would have to give the okay. So for the most part, really the only bans here are the no-knock warrants and the chokeholds. Even neck restraints are only prohibited, except for in certain circumstances. So it allows for some of that. That's some of that middle that they ended up finding that I was talking about. So there is still going to be things that can be done when you're talking about protests or if you see, you know, WTO kind of happen again, that kind of thing.
Okay. What about the school mascots?
So this was a big deal. We know this came from Representative Lakanoff early in session. She was very passionate about the use of the Native American names, symbols on team uniforms or as mascots, and finding it really, the Native American community, insulting and damaging. And I think she had pointed to in one of the committee meetings I heard about, you know, you'd go in and they'd be talking about kill the Braves because the other team's name is Brave, but that's still something that's very, very personal and very harmful to some in the Native American community. So they, again, found somewhat of the middle on this bill. It passed the Senate last night. It's already passed the House. I do believe there was an amendment, so there has to be concurrence. But essentially what this does is it limits what it prohibits the use of any Native American names, symbols on team uniforms, as mascots, anything like that. But it allows for the collaboration. So if a tribe says you're okay, if you communicate with them and they don't have a problem with it, which is the case in some parts of the state already, where they've kind of come to agreement in certain schools and with tribes that they're okay with them using these names because it's something that they mutually discuss. This allows for that, the final version of that bill. So it's a compromise. The biggest pushback I heard on it was they'd rather it was just left up to more local control, whether there being a state law that says you cannot do this unless you get the tribe's permission. But in the end, that's the way it ended up. And I think this will be likely signed by the governor.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm still not sure I understand the enforcement mechanism, if any. So the default position, the state's, what is it? The advice is don't use it unless you get permission? Or is there some formal process that qualifies as, quote, permission?
The Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, so OSPI, will come up with those eventual rules that you're talking about. But yeah, it would be the initial guidance. And it's also phased out, I should say, because there's already quite a few schools in the state that have these names and that use these types of mascots. So there's, I think it's by September of this year, they have to start incentivizing schools to start phasing that out rapidly. And then they have to have
incentivizing?
It. Incentivizing? Yep. That's what
incentive?
And that's what OSPI has to come up with. So I don't see what that is yet. Yeah. But in the end, this is going to be considered a win.
Could there be, I mean, what I'm getting at is, because this is what's going to cause a real ruckus, would there be punishment for schools that aren't, don't follow the incentive to drop their Native American mascots?
Again, that's something that the state school superintendent will have to come up with, is what that looks like. But there would be, I think, you know, you're going to be looking at things that schools get. I don't know that it's not like a, against the law where you'd be charged with a crime or anything like that. It, it has to do with various kind of dollars and things that go to schools, probably. Yeah.
Power Radio's Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet. You can ring my bell.
Ring the bell. This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien and Chris Sullivan. One of the groups that is the most reluctant to get the vaccine turns out to be Republican men, and the numbers show that 49% of Republican men are just refusing to get it, and it's got their relatives worried. But, Rachel, what can you do about that?
Ooh, well, I think it depends on the Republican man in your life. So this story comes from The Lily, which is a section of The Washington Post. In this article, it says there are wives and daughters on a mission to change the minds of these Republican men in their lives. So like you said, 49% of Republican men, according to this NPR PBS NewsHour poll, don't plan to get vaccinated, which is the highest percentage of any other demographic in the country. So just to put it in perspective, only 34% of Republican women don't plan to get vaccinated. So they kind of in this article blame, if you will, Donald Trump, because even though he got vaccinated before he left office, he wasn't encouraging people to get the vaccine. Also, he was, of course, downplaying the virus, which is a big reason why a lot of people don't want to get the vaccination. So what a lot of these women, according to this article, have decided to do is threaten these men. Things like, you won't be able to see your grandchildren if you're married to one of these guys. You know, we can't go on a vacation because what if you have to show later, you know, vaccination and you don't get yours? How are we going to go on our trip to Disney World? So they're not sure that it's going to work. But in some cases of the people they featured here, it did work. In some cases, it didn't. But according to Geeta Swami, who is an obstetrician, gynecologist and researcher at Duke University School of Medicine, she says no vaccine has ever been as politicized as this one has been. It goes beyond party lines. One of the examples it said was that the reason that women might be more likely to get the vaccination is because, quote, women are the ones choosing the doctors, finding out from friends who's the best pediatrician in town. They are more familiar and more comfortable with the idea of vaccines than men are. There's another expert in this article who says that conservative men might not see the vaccine as manly. They said a lot of men refused to wear masks and they didn't want a social distance because it didn't fit a narrative of men as, quote, superhuman and invincible. They feel that this would impose on their masculinity.
If only someone would invent a manly mask.
Yes,
feeling
funky, fresh, yes, interesting idea, Dave. I have something about that right here. So Will.i.am, who is a rapper and entrepreneur, he was one of the founding members of the Black Eyed Peas. He came up with this idea for a really high-tech mask that they're calling the smart mask, which is a new category in masks. He's been involved in technology for a while. He helped found Beats Electronics back in 2006. He loves technology and R&D. So he got connected with Honeywell, which is a company that made millions of N95 masks over the past year. And it's called the Super Mask with an X, the Super Mask.
Super
and
mask.
It's made of, it looks very sci-fi.
Yes.
It makes you look like the fly. It covers half of your face very snugly. It's made of a mix of silicon and athletic mesh fabric, but it's more than just a mask. So it also includes noise canceling headphones, LED lights for nighttime, a rechargeable battery, Bluetooth capabilities, and it has these dual speed fans and a filtration system, which they say is not medical quality, but I guess that means that they're filtering the air out.
Yeah.
Also, it completely covers your nose so your glasses don't get
fogged. See, that's the best part. That's been the big problem with masks, right, is the glass fogging problem, and he's solved that.
And so the idea is, while you're wearing this mask, you can play music and you can, you know, hear the music through the mask. You can take calls, and it costs about $300, which, of course, is expensive for a mask, but they point out that that is an average price for noise-canceling headphones.
Noise-canceling headphones. And the thing I like about it is his concept here is we have long been used to covering up parts of the human body. I mean, you're my witness. I was calling these things face bikinis from the beginning. The mouth became a private part. So, you know, we cover up our shoes. You know, we wear bathing suits. Why not adopt the mask during a pandemic? And that's his concept here. I think it's genius.
Yeah, and the mask is designed by a guy named Jose Fernandez, who is a Hollywood costume designer. He created the SpaceX suits for Elon Musk. He worked on Black Panther, The Avengers, and X-Men 2, so this gives you an idea of what this mask looks like. But just like what you said, because people are saying, well, why are you coming out with this now? People are starting to get vaccinated. Maybe masks are on their way out. And he said, quote, SARS happened in Japan and Southeast Asia, and they got over it, and they still wear masks. So he's thinking that this might be the norm in the West, just something we do to prevent flu and colds, something you might want to wear on an airplane so you don't get sick.
And if it helps keep Republican men safe, why not?
Yes, and I still think it should have a mustache on it, so it's manly.
If you're going to spend that much for a mask, I'm sure they could customize it for you.
Rhinestone mustache, that's what I want.
Rachel Bell. Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks, Dave Ross.
I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News.
You can hear us live every morning on 97.3 FM or subscribe to this podcast and you'll never miss the show.